Hello, this is Warren Hoyt. It's good to be with you again today as we continue going through Dr. Timothy Keller's book, Making Sense of God. Today we're looking at Chapter 9, which is titled The Problem of Morals. This is a good one because the issue of morals comes up whenever we're talking with secularists, relativists, humanists, atheists. It's just a very important subject to deal with, to think about, to wrestle with. Keller starts this chapter off talking about a guy named A.N. Wilson, who was at one time contemplating entering into the ministry, but then lost his faith and became an atheist, was friends with Richard Dawkins and Christopher Hitchens, and, you know, those famous atheists. And then he later renounced atheism and came back to faith. And Keller says, why? Why did he come back to faith? Well, what brought this guy back around was that he realized that atheism was incoherent and totally irrational because of its inability to explain things like love, beauty, and art, or morality. That morality always comes up. It's an issue that has a lot to say to us about the existence of God. Fyodor Dostoevsky, the Russian writer, wrote that without God and the future life, everything is permitted. One can do anything. Atheists, of course, really bristle when you quote that. They get mad about it because it seems to imply that we're saying that atheists are immoral or they're less moral or less good than believers. But we're not, or we shouldn't at least, be saying such a thing. Because let's face it, the Bible teaches that we're all created in the image of God, but it also teaches that we're all sinners. So since we're all created in the image of God, even a non-Christian, an atheist can do good, and they can even be a better person morally than say some Christian. And a Christian, though saved and loved by God, could actually fail terribly and commit sins as heinous as any atheist. The point is not to say Christians or believers are more moral or better people than atheists or unbelievers. That's not the point. What this guy A.N. Wilson and Dostoevsky were both claiming wasn't that Christians are better or more moral than atheists, but simply that without God there can be no moral obligation. That's the emphasis. There can't be any moral obligation. An atheist can say, I feel that this is the right way to act, and so I'm going to behave this way. But he or she cannot say, I believe this is the right way to act, and I believe everyone else should be compelled to act this way too. Why can't they say that? Well, because on the atheistic worldview, there is no source of morality outside the individual to which all are accountable. Everything is just based on inner subjective feelings or thoughts or intuitions. There's nothing objective outside the individual, which definitely establishes the rightness or wrongness, the morality or the immorality of any behavior or belief. Now, the problem for atheists is that nobody really lives this way. Nobody lives as if there were no standards or says that everyone should just do whatever they want and no one else should judge them for it. Nobody really lives that way. Everybody recognizes deep down the existence of what we call moral facts, or what Keller calls moral facts. These are just things that we know are right or wrong. We all just sort of know them intuitively, instinctively. But that's a real problem for a thinking atheist because there's no legitimate explanation for why we think these things are right or wrong or why we know they are. There's just no explanation for it. Now, in fairness, Keller says morality is actually a problem for both believers and non-believers, but for different reasons. In this chapter, he just looks at the problem that it poses for non-believers. In the next chapter, chapter 10, he's going to look at how morality is often wrongly used by believers. It tends to make believers harsh and exclusive toward others and turn religion kind of into an oppressive force. He's going to deal with that in the next chapter. But for now, let's just look with him at the problem morality poses for unbelievers. Now, morality, in one sense, you could say that modern society has become more moral than any society in history. Because, you know, the Western world today, our society today, values human life more and calls for equal rights more and aid to the poor and the disenfranchised, the immigrants, refugees, etc., probably more than any society in history. And so, let's face it, lots of things have improved markedly in today's modern society. Some time ago, I was listening to some YouTube clips of Geert Wilders. He's a parliamentarian who ran for, I don't know what they call it, prime minister or president of Holland recently. He lost. But I really like Geert Wilders. He argues against what I call Europe's suicidal policies and so on. And so he's more of a right-wing guy, and I like him. And I was listening to him give a speech to the Dutch parliament and then different parliamentarians responding to him. And it was kind of surprising that they propounded really Christian-sounding values as they argued with him. And they were, you know, propounding those values to justify the opening of their borders to the flood of Syrian refugees. It's kind of, it's just very surprising how Christian sounding it was. But the problem is that these are secular people. And if you ask Western people who are secular, Western society people who are secular, why should we live in the ways that they're saying we should live? That's when they begin to have problems. If you say, why should we support equality and guard human rights and sacrifice to help the poor and so on, the only answer that they can give is that these ideas are, quote, self-authorizing, unquote. We just sort of recognize them intuitively. So they will all agree, for the most part, that there's just no standard out there somewhere to which moderns can point to justify their moral stance. But think about it. If you got your moral values just because you created them as an individual, as we talked about in the last chapter or so, you know, you just kind of you just look within and you cook up these values as an individual, well, then you shouldn't be able to insist that others follow them, right? Because they're just from within you. If, on the other hand, you say that as a whole culture, we kind of just created them, we just all just agreed that these are the right values, well, then how could it be right for us as a culture to insist that some other culture would accept them? All Westerners, for example, believe in gender equality and racial equality these days, but that wasn't always the case. And it's not the case in some other cultures. So we think that it should be. Why? On what basis? Modern society doesn't believe anymore that there's a God out there who tells us what's right and wrong. Modern people believe that they just come up with right and wrong out of their own culture. We've come up with these values ourselves. Yet, at the same time, most modern people actually believe that these things that our culture has come up with should be recognized as kind of universal moral norms, and they should be accepted by every culture. But they don't really realize how hypocritical that is, or how unfounded that is. How could it be? It's really a schizophrenic kind of thing, if you want to know the truth. That's what Keller says in this chapter. If you're going to say our cultural values are just our cultural values, but then you're going to turn around and say, but they're universal and every other culture should accept them too. If you do that, that's self-justifying and it's self-contradictory. The problem of absolute morality and the lack thereof has really gotten us to a place today where it's very difficult for us to even discuss moral values because we can't, if we don't agree, we have no recourse to a higher authority. We just try to shout down our opponent because we can't resolve conflicts any other way. And it's kind of funny how conflicted our modern culture is because of these issues, you know? It's really kind of almost comical. On the one hand, postmodern people, they don't believe in absolutes, and so they say everybody can just come up with their own values and nobody should judge anybody else. But on the other hand, they have these certain values that they're sure are right, and they insist that everybody should accept them. People think we can just resort to reason to know right from wrong, and they say everyone just automatically knows within themselves right from wrong. But the truth is, there is no such self-evident set of moral values everybody agrees on. I mean, think about it. Islamists are sure that it's Allah's will to blow up infidels. But we in the West, we're sure that they're wrong, right? Well, on what basis? How can we be sure that they are wrong and we're right? So Keller says, you know, in theory, we may be relativists, but in practice and interaction with others who disagree with us, we're absolutists. And I think that is a profound and true, very true statement. In theory, we may be relativists, but in practice, we're absolutists. And Keller thinks that this is one of the major sources of the polarization that we currently see so prevalently in our culture, and I got to agree with him. He talks about a public school teacher in his church congregation who came up to him and told him about her frustration with the school's, quote, character education, unquote. It was a program that she had to teach kids. I think it was elementary school. So she had to teach kids values like justice, unselfishness with possessions, and telling the truth and all that sort of thing. But if the kids were to ask why they should value these things or practice these things, the school authorities told her she was not allowed to point to any authority like the Bible or a religion or church or anything like that. She just had to say, well, because these things are just right to do. And so, you know, it's quite a dilemma. Really? They're just right to do? But why, you see? Who says that they're right to do? Any such moral values that a teacher tries to teach with that view end up becoming completely groundless. They're just floating, as it were, in midair. You can't say why they're true. Well, we're just saying they're true. But yet at the same time, you don't dare tell the kids, well, we made these up. Because if you tell them that, then they're not going to practice any of them. So it's really a dilemma. And Keller says you can't look to sociology or the social sciences for shared moral sources because they haven't found any basis for them. Social science hasn't found any basis for moral sources. They don't have any authority out there. Now, some believe that the values that we have are just the result of evolution, but that's kind of a stupid argument because you think that, our ancient ancestors felt that loving self-sacrifice was right, and so they had this good value and it caused them to survive, to reproduce, and that's why we have those values today. Well, the problem with that is, let's face it, self-sacrifice doesn't usually lead to survival. So it doesn't really work out in practicality, the theory that we got it from evolution, you know. Then there's another prevalent theory that, well, we used to believe in these things when we were ignorant and superstitious, but we've since grown up and now we just arbitrarily decide on our moral laws, but they're a product of power, not reason. The powerful establish the rules. And so, you know, some people think that's the way we explain it. But the problem with that is if there's no absolute moral values, then the powerful are just establishing these things based on an illusion. So the theories out there in the secular world, they don't really present any solid reason for not doing whatever we feel like doing. I mean, if you can get away with it, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you? You could just get away with it and do anything you want. The problem is, again, nobody really believes this or lives like it. Everybody knows, for example, that what Hitler did in the Holocaust was evil. Everybody knows that if you just hurt people, if you torture babies or something like that, everybody knows that that's evil. You can't get out of it. Everybody knows stealing, killing, lying, adultery is wrong. And people who try to be, you know, act like they're total relativists and they don't think things are wrong, you know, oh no, everything is relative. There are no absolutes. Those people, they're mostly people who live a comfortable life. And so nothing's being done to them. But see, if you steal from them, if you attack them, if they're tortured, if they're sold into slavery, if they're put in some kind of death camp, then they would not think everything is relative. They would think that there are absolutes and that these things are wrong. And so you can't be a moral relativist in everyday life. And that's just a fact. So here's a good long quote I like. Keller says in this chapter, he says, quote, secularism continues to lack even a rudimentary explanation for why moral obligation exists if there is no God. Our contemporary culture has schizophrenia about moral commitments, has no good way to impart them to our children, and doesn't even have a good explanation about why we have such convictions. Modern people say they do not believe in absolute moral values, but they can't function without practically assuming them, and they won't admit that they're doing it, unquote. You see, the moral law, this issue of morality, is a big problem for the secular worldview. Now, it's interesting, though sad, when you think about how we got to this present state. I mean, for hundreds of years of Western civilization, we believed our lives were created by God for a purpose, and He had a code and values for us to live by. But then over time, people began to gradually throw those values out and throw those beliefs out, and what that did was it cast us adrift. And so now we find ourselves just on our own, floating about without any kind of anchor. During the Enlightenment, reason was exalted. Reason will solve all the problems. We don't need revelation. We just need reason. We can look within ourselves to establish our purpose and establish codes for living and so forth. But as we saw last chapter and then again in this one, that concept has failed. Reason fails because people arrive at different moral codes using their reason in different cultures. And because reason can't even determine stuff like purpose, you know, what were we made for? And so what are we supposed to be doing? How can reason determine that? You can't determine that except if you have a designer who tells you what you were made for. The human race can't determine its own purpose or its own code. Only the designer could give us that, but we want to reject the designer. You know, like Keller talks about, if you didn't know what a watch was made for, well, how could you determine if it was a good watch or a bad watch? You wouldn't know what time, you know, telling time is supposed to be like, or you wouldn't know what was the right time. So you couldn't tell if the watch was a good watch or a bad watch. Maybe you throw it at a squirrel and you try to hunt with it and you say, well, it wasn't good because I missed the squirrel. Well, then, so the watch is no good. Well, you're not using the watch for the purpose for which it was made. How can we determine if we're living as we were made to live if we don't know the person who designed us, if we don't have some kind of thing outside ourselves that tells us? Well, we can't. That's the honest answer. Now, modern people today, they don't accept that. And they want to say, no, we can still determine our purpose. We determine our purpose by ourselves. We just look within and determine our purpose or things of that nature, as we looked at last time. And when it comes to morality, right and wrong, some people say, you know, there's various ways that the modern people try to deal with it. Some people just say, well, there is no right or wrong. Just accept that and move on. Well, the trouble with that kind of thinking is it's totally just impractical because, you know, we live together with other people. And people do things to one another that are right or wrong. How could you have laws or police or courts or solve conflicts between people if you didn't have any sort of code to live by? That it just doesn't work to say, hey, there is no code, just live with it. No, that doesn't work. We have to have some sort of standard out there. Another approach is to just say, well, morality exists. But that doesn't mean there's a God. You just have to recognize it. Like if you look at a tree, you see the tree is there. That doesn't mean there's a God. There's just a tree. And so recognize there's a tree or there's a mountain and you just accept it. But it doesn't prove there's a God. Well, Keller had a guy say that to him once after one of his classes. And he said the way he answered that was, he says, look, when you see a tree or a mountain, it's just an object. And so you recognize that there's an object, and I accept what you're saying. You don't have to say there's a God who created it. You just say it's there, and I live with it. Okay, fine, he said. But morality is kind of different. Don't you agree? He asked this man. He says, you know, morality is not saying that there's an object that exists or something like that. Morality is more a kind of a sense within you of obligation. You're obligated to not do this and instead to do that and so forth. It's a sense of obligation within you. But Keller asked this guy, he says, a sense of obligation is not just like a tree or a mountain. If there's a sense of obligation, isn't it true that there must be some person out there that we feel obligated to? To whom are we obligated? Why do we feel this sense of obligation? He said, you know, The guy said, well, just to, we're obligated to ourselves or we're obligated to others. But he said, you know what? Keller said, you know what? People easily dismiss a sense of obligation like that, but you can't really dismiss this sense of obligation we feel. We just know we have to do right and we have to avoid wrong. And so Keller says, and I agree, that this is a strong case for the existence of God, because there has to be a person out there to which our moral obligation is owed. So the moral argument for God says, number one, if there are objectively binding moral obligations, then God exists. Number two, there are objectively binding moral obligations. Therefore, number three, God must exist. So if there are objectively binding moral obligations, then God exists. If there's a moral law, there must be a lawgiver. Now, many people try to say, well, there are no binding moral obligations. There is no moral law. But as we've seen, almost everybody recognizes intuitively the inescapable reality of a sense of right and wrong. And if you don't recognize it out there in the general sense, all we have to do is do something wrong to you and you will recognize it. You might say, no, there's no absolute right and wrong. But if I punch you or I steal your property, you're going to say, why did you do that? That's wrong. And you will recognize. So everybody does recognize intuitively. It's inescapable. There is a sense of right and wrong. But if there's no person to whom we're accountable, why do we all instinctively recognize these things and instinctively try to justify ourselves, try to turn from doing wrong and turn toward doing good, though we fail at it? So this is a powerful argument. It's something we need to always think about in dealing with secular people, because it's something they don't have an answer for. It doesn't prove God, but it's one more strong evidence for him, one more strong argument among many. The thing is, the secular worldview doesn't explain a universe with moral laws. If the universe is an accident, just big cosmic accident that happened by chance, then why do we have this sense of a moral law, of a moral obligation, of a sense of right and wrong within us? Where does it come from? If your theory that you have doesn't explain all the facts very well, maybe you should consider another theory. Well, what Keller's saying in this chapter is the secular theory about life and the world and so forth doesn't explain a lot of things like beauty and love and moral law. Maybe secularism should be trashed, should be ditched, and maybe people should turn to God. And I think that's a good point to take from this lesson. It's one of the key takeaways. Everybody recognizes the existence of moral facts. It's inescapable. Secularism has no explanation for any of it. The Bible, belief in God, faith in God does. Morality makes sense only because there is a God. Till next time, may the Lord richly bless you. That's my prayer.